Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the podcast, Like Anime. My name's George, and we got Tony back again.
Hey, it's me again.
And we're back again for another round.
Back and once again for the Renegade Master. All right.
Copyright.
That's an old song. No one's going to get that reference. That's fine. Let's talk about Saturday anime.
Yeah.
Let's start with the most popular, probably, of this season, Boku no Hero Academia.
My hero. Yeah.
So this is, episode two, if we're counting the first one, is zero. Episode three, if we're not counting the first one, is zero. And episode, I think, 91 or 92, if we're just, you know, going straight through. I don't actually remember the number. I probably should write that down sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. Second of the season. I'm good with that.
Yeah. That's what I've just been calling it, episode two. So.
Yeah. So this one, I don't know. To me, it's like, I feel like we're back on track. Because last week, there was some like housekeeping, story-wise, some like housekeeping things going on with Endeavor and his family relationships and how he views himself as a hero. And then there was Deku's dream of the successor, you know, the predecessors, rather, of all or one for all.
Yeah.
We're going to mix that up at some point.
Yeah, the vestiges, as they call it.
Oh, vestiges.
Vestiges. Yeah. That was the title of the episode.
That's right.
So in this episode, we start off with Midoriya talking to All Might about the vestiges.
He basically, All Might just says he never really had a dream like that, and hasn't really communicated with those predecessors of vestiges, but he was like aware of kind of the origins of.
It seemed like, maybe I misunderstood or misinterpreted what he was saying, but he had been aware of the vestiges, and had, you know, communicated, I think, but just not to the extent that Midoriya was able to communicate with, All For One's brother.
Yeah. So the originator.
Yeah. Who we should probably just call One For All.
Yeah. Yeah.
The All OG. For One, One For All, right?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that he has a name yet. He probably does. Well, at least in the manga, but
yeah.
So far, we don't know what his name is.
We don't know his name yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of have a talk about that, which is interesting. And then the rest of the episode is them setting up. They're back to school. Mm-hmm. This is what I kind of missed of like just some feeling some momentum of, you know, what's the next thing we're doing, you know, because we last season we kind of ended halfway mid-season with this huge crazy battle.
Mm.
And then we had sort of a lull. They were doing the school festival and there was the gentle criminal, he's the villain of that season, but he's more you know, comedic, you know, he was amusing, but it was kind of, to me, like, where are we going? And so this, to me, I mean, nothing really is happening. They're just doing a square off with class B.
Yep. 1A versus 1B.
Yeah. And we know some of these characters. There's a bunch of characters. They showed like all these title cards and I got kind of excited, just, you know, add some more characters and see where that goes. But
yeah, they should have done this as the episode zero where they reintroduce everybody, because I didn't remember most of these. Like,
yeah,
there was a few that I was like, I feel like I maybe remember that character being introduced before. I mean, obviously there were ones that they said where they introduced them in the original battles and stuff, but
yeah, at least half of them were completely unfamiliar to me.
Mm. Yeah. So anyway, so class A versus class 1B, we're going to punch each other for a while. Based on the teaser at the end of the episode, it's going to last at least through that entire episode and probably into the next one. And I'll check back in with you guys in about 3 weeks when we get some more story.
I'm a little more optimistic about, because we've talked about this off mic a little bit, where I mean, it's kind of a trope now that My Hero does in and of itself, but they'll start some sort of school, you know, activity, whether it's a tournament or it's it's something that they're doing now, or it's some sort of like exercise, you know, training exercise. And then all of a sudden in the middle of it, you know, unexpectedly, a villain Shigaraki shows up, or I forget what that the villain in the city when they were kind of doing their first he's like homicidal dude. I forget his name, but
in this season?
No, in like the first season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was trying to harken back, but I couldn't.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't remember his name. But it always kind of happens. I mean, not always, but it often happens that way where it's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this school thing, school related training, whatever it is. And then, oh my God, we got a real situation here. There's actual villains and we didn't, cause I really like that angle of, you know, they're training them to be full heroes, but they're not heroes yet. Right. But they kind of know some things and they're getting stronger as they go. But it's really fun and exciting for them to be forced and, you know, just thrust into a real villain confrontation without really being there yet. And the teachers don't want it to happen, but it just keeps happening. And it says something special about their class. But
the trope has been set up pretty well. They do that quite a lot, I guess. But I don't know. I guess if and when that happens, maybe I'll become interested again. But if it's just class A and 1B, or class 1A and class 1B just punching each other, which it probably will be for most of the next episode, I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to be tuned out. Cause I just don't care.
Yeah. And I hear you.
Unless, you know, Midoriya comes up with an Alabama smash or something, you know, I don't know. Then I'll be excited for 2 seconds when he says it, and then I'll go back to being zoned out, probably. Anyway, this episode, I mean, it's probably like a 5. It's pretty average, you know, for me. Overall, the show's still like, you know, 6 to 7-ish. I mean, this season, like 6-ish, because, you know, they're setting things up.
Yeah.
The stuff they set up so far is interesting. And then the show overall is, I think, still just a 7 for me, but I'm sure it's higher for most other people.
It's probably a 7 for me too. It's still going, you know, we're in the middle of it. So certain seasons been, you know, more exciting than others perhaps, but
yeah,
I'm ready to see what goes on next here.
Yeah. I don't want exciting. I want interesting, but you know, I don't know. I guess those two go together sometimes.
Yeah. There's overlap there.
All right. And then I have to switch to the other tab so that I know that the next thing we're talking about is not an anime.
It's like anime.
Yeah. We keep reusing that trope. So
yeah,
maybe we should let that one go.
That's my catchphrase. All right. Next we have a show that only I'm watching is Thunderbolt Fantasy season 3. We're back with episode 2 of the season. And I, from last week, I was a little, I don't know, still into it, but a little, like, underwhelmed. And this one didn't alleviate that. I still enjoyed parts of it, but it still feels like a little rushed and, like, a little bit underwritten to me. And I'm still, like, it's still not finding its footing, which is unfortunate because the first two seasons, I think, are so, just so gripping. But they each, those two seasons each, like, started kind of small and slow in a good way and built up what the you know, the point of that season is going to be. And this one is just kind of like jumping into it and all this stuff's happening. I don't know. I don't know how into it I need to get. They've essentially incorporated these mirrors, scryed mirrors, they call, that are pretty much gates that'll like transport you to another place in the world. But you don't know where it'll take you. And so our heroes get ambushed at the end of the first episode. This episode, they somehow know about those mirrors, and one of them finds one, and they all, you know, once if they're all touching at the same time and then touch the mirror, they get away. And so they save themselves from this, like, ambush that was just kind of sprung on us. And then they find themselves in a land where they don't know where they are, and they're getting attacked by bandits. And they transport to another place. And now they're in sort of a more civilized area that they recognize. There's like, it's like a place with temples and shrines, and it kind of left it on a bit of a cliffhanger. But
so does the mirror thing, mirror scry, is that what you called it?
Scryed mirror.
Like, yeah. Does that transport with them? So they're just carrying it around. So no matter where they are, they can do it. Or are they like just found in certain locations or?
So what I gathered is, so basically when they get ambushed at the end of the first episode, and then that picks up here and they're like fighting and stuff. There's cool fight scenes. And one of them sees the mirror and is like, what is that? And it's kind of just like a fragment of like, you know, like a shard, but a bigger shard. Mm. And he doesn't know what it is, but then our main character sees him from across the way, and like, that's where I was kind of thrown, but he like immediately knows what it is. Mm. And so he runs by like a tree and he grabs like a leaf, and that's like a similar size. And then he's like, let's all touch. And then they go through the mirror. And so
let's all touch each other. Sorry.
Oh yeah. And we're puppets. That's how we do.
Dirty puppets.
So they go through the gate, and then the bad guys that they were fighting go to where they disappeared, and they knew what the gates are. They're surprised that they knew what they were. Mm. And they know where they, you know, disappeared. There's just that leaf. And so I assume that somehow they were able to go through the gate, leave the leaf, and take the shard. But yes, regardless, they have it with them. But I guess the whole thing is it sort of intermittently activates. So once they, they are transported to this kind of desert wasteland area, they're just kind of waiting for it to change back so they can go anywhere else.
I see.
So that's kind of a problem I have with it. Like when they end up going to another place, they're being chased by more bad guys, and one of the characters is like, hey, isn't that gate ready yet? And the character looks, and like it changes right then. It's like, oh, wow. I'm glad you said that. Mm. Which also begs the question, like, should they have been constantly looking at this? Because he pulls it out of his, like, you know, jacket pocket, like, or, you know, whatever. It's like, they, you know, should have just been staring at it in case you don't miss it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they were in the midst of a battle, so, you
That's
know.
That's true.
Probably need to protect it maybe, or on. You know, yeah, they need that hand for, you know, something else.
That's right. Those little convenient plot points, I'm like, okay. And the end of the first, or the end of this episode, has me intrigued. One of the characters, like, when they are transported through these gates, they all pretty much go to the same area, but it's like they're in that vicinity. Like, even though they all transport in the same place, they end up kind of nearby, but in different areas.
So they're all touching when they transport, but then when they're transported,
yeah,
they're all scattered.
Yeah.
Askew.
Like, and it doesn't seem very far, but like far enough where they're like, we don't know where everyone is at this, you know, moment. And one of the characters is kind of in this, I don't know. It's like, they're kind of in the middle of a palace, and he's in one of these, in one of the rooms of the palace. And it seems to be like the princess or some sort of a regal noble lady who spots him at the end of it. So I was like, that was kind of like one thing where I was like, okay, let's see where this goes. But I feel it feels like they're treading water at this point.
And presumably everyone else is outside the palace or something. Or
yeah,
maybe
they
rooms,
gather.
Or?
They oh, gather okay. and they're like, where is, what's his name? I don't have all their names down yet. But yeah, and then they cut to him, and he's... yeah, about to get caught by this lovely lady.
All right. Is she a sexy puppet, George?
She looks cute.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I guess I'm just sticking at a 6. I mean, maybe I should have given this a 5. But yeah, it's not, so far it's disappointing me from what I've, from the previous seasons. So I was really excited that it was coming back, and now I'm getting worried.
I mean, it's all based on source material written by the same person, right?
I'm not sure exactly. I thought it was like original.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought there was source material for some reason. Okay.
But see, I believe this third season is the same, but I'm not entirely sure. But the first two seasons were written and directed by I can't remember his dang name. But he
I mean, you said his name in the What We're Going to Watch episode, so
yeah,
you know, go and check back there, and then you'll know his name, and then come back here and just pretend George is saying it.
There you go. But he's done other shows like, have you heard of this show, Madoka Magica?
I have it. The Thunderbolt Fantasy guy has.
Really, yeah, it's the same dude.
Those seem pretty, in my mind, pretty far away from each other.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and like style and setting and stuff. But I really like his writing. He's done other things too, and I just can't think right now. But yeah, he's a pretty like accomplished writer director. Yeah.
But you're not sure if he's writing this season or not.
Yeah, I had read that online that he was, but it didn't, you know, it's just on Wikipedia or something. And I don't know, I need to pay much closer attention to the credits, even though I can't read them. So
yeah, it is kind of hard if you don't read. I mean, even if you do read Japanese, like reading kanji, which you know, names are often kanji, and the kanjis make different sounds than they normally do. So it can be kind of hard to read names unless you just know the name.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I guess, yeah, that's disappointing that it's kind of gone away from this sort of thing that you enjoyed about it, I guess. But it still has time to come back.
That's true. Yeah.
Do you know how many episodes it is? Is it?
I mean, I assume it'll be 12.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will continue watching it, even if it continues to be... and it continues to not grab me or wow me. I'm into it enough that I have to see how it goes. So
yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah. I'm invested.
All right. Well, that's enough talking about puppets. Let's talk about some anime. I brought it back again. You thought I was going to stop. So I've got, next up on the list, I see doint. No, that's not the word. Don't Toy With Me, Miss Nagatoro. So this one looks, you know, based on the previews, looked like it had some sort of HE-ish vibes, I guess. And, I don't know. To be honest, I didn't really get much HE stuff from it. Mm. It's really not that suggestive in that way. Basically our main character is this socially inept, second year high school student. I don't remember his name. I didn't write it down because. Well, I'll tell you later. and he has a random encounter with a random first-year girl who goes to the same school, who then proceeds to sort of torment him in various ways, just sort of making fun of him, making him uncomfortable, although never in an HE sort of way, at least as far as I remember. But yeah, she's just messing with him. She's just she's kind of a jerk. I guess maybe, I mean, this is based on the first episode, so I don't know how it's going to play out, but it seems like maybe they're trying to go for like a theme of him coming out of his shell because he's so socially inept. And so this tormentor sort of drives him to fight back against her or something, you know, verbally at least, maybe. And that's the only really redeeming arc I can see possibly happening. I don't know. She just seems really mean, and she enjoys being mean, and he's clearly not enjoying it, which makes her enjoy it more. And I don't know.
So you're supposed to join her and just being mean, or you're supposed to be sympathetic towards him?
Yeah, I think we're supposed to maybe identify with the main character in some way, which I guess, yeah, if you've had people torment you, bother you, you know, when you were in school, then maybe you can identify with him in some way. But he's, I don't know. She's just like so over the top, just sadistic, basically. Not physically, but in every other way.
What's like the worst thing she does?
I don't even remember. I'm trying to try and think of an example of something that she does. So when they first encounter each other, a manga that he is drawing falls out of his bag, and one of the other girls sees it and is sort of like making fun of him about it. And then Miss Nagatoro goes over and looks at it, and then her friends leave, and she's left there talking to him, and she basically just tells him that he's a terrible writer because his characters are completely unrealistic, and like, oh, so you write this character to be like you, but you would never actually talk to someone that way, and you know. I don't know. She's just mean.
Tears him down.
Yeah. She's just super mean. So yeah, I don't super identify with the character because he's so, what's the word? He doesn't stand up for himself at all. Mm. He just sort of goes with it. And they do sort of hint at like, that is a thematic element that they are intentionally incorporating into this character, in that they're saying, you know, he sort of learned at a young age that when he was being bullied to just sort of, you know, go into a shell and, you know, don't respond or anything. And then the bullies will get bored and leave you alone. So this is sort of what he's trying to do here, but it doesn't work on her. She just continues to torment him further and be more and more amused by it.
Jeez.
Yeah, she's just, I'm sure they're going to redeem her in some way, but she feels like a horrible person at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, just, she's just evil. Anyway, the art, is well done. The animation is well done. Like, it looks good. There's nothing wrong on that end. I may watch the next episode. I'm unsure. I haven't 100% determined if I'm going to drop it yet. I feel like by the time next week comes around and, it's like, hey, it's time to watch, Nagatoro. I'm probably going to not want to watch it. So yeah. I guess we'll see. Right now it's a 5 of 10. It's not bad. It's just not good in any way either. You know,
not sure what the point is.
Yeah. And yeah, unless they figure something out and, or allow me to figure something out and get something out of this, other than just watching this poor boy be tortured by this girl. I'm not going to watch anymore. So we'll see. Maybe I'll report back next week. Maybe I'll just tell you that I dropped it and didn't watch anymore. Up next we have Tokyo Revengers.
Yes, I saw this one.
I saw this one as well. It was not what I expected it to be, based on the previews. Like, I sort of had a concept in my mind of it being, more of a redo of high school sort of thing, which has been done in anime before where, you know, you get to go back and redo high school and correct all of your mistakes and stuff.
Mm. And that's for a moment in this episode, I thought that's what it was going to be.
That's what it seems like at first. Yeah. But then it sort of changes as it goes on. Yeah.
I liked this. It kind of reminded me of a show that I ended up not watching, but from last season, Mushoku Tensei. Jobless reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But I only saw the first episode of that, and I think that's why I'm reminded of it. But in the very beginning, he's like sort of this shut-in who just plays video games and doesn't really talk to people, and you know, blah blah blah. So when he gets, you know, transported back to olden days, I really wanted him to have like this sort of redemption arc and trying to better himself, and I just wasn't getting that in the very limited amount that I saw. But for this, in this first episode, just comparing those, he kind of does, like, he does get transported. He falls on these train tracks and, you know, believes he's dead and, you know, wakes up and realizes it's however many years in the past. And he's, he's back in middle school and he's part of this, you know, little gang that thinks they're all that, but then they get their asses kicked and, but through all that, he's realizing that what his rose-tinted memories of when he was in middle school, he pictured that as like his high mark, the watermark of his life. You know, especially compared to where he's at now, and just feels like, you know, he's just a pushover that's, you know, done nothing with his life. But then he's like in middle school again and realizing, you know, this isn't all that it was cracked up to be either.
Yeah. And it starts with like almost immediately he sees himself in a mirror and he's like, what am I wearing? Like, what?
Yeah. He's like, kind of like, yeah, just turned off by everything about who he is. Like visually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then beyond that too.
And he seems to have forgotten a lot of, you know, things that were probably important and relevant to his life at that time. Like he obviously recognizes all of his friends, but again, the rose tinted lenses you were talking about, like his memory of them isn't that of childish, thugs, I guess. I don't know like how you would describe them, but, they're what you would expect from middle school gangsters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, being an adult, like, you know, sees them differently now than he did at the time when he thought that they were all cool, I guess, right? So, yeah.
And
so
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Showing some humility and some, you know, I don't know. It's a nice angle that they went for.
Yeah, and that's some of the stuff that we saw in the preview that is what made me think that this was going to be a, a redo sort of thing where he, you know, goes back and sees how stupid he and his friends were and then, like, changes not only himself but them and, like, betters all of their lives. Like, that's sort of where I saw the story going based on the preview. But it looks like that's not really the case.
There's something more going on here.
Yeah. So there's a girl that was his junior high girlfriend.
And his only girlfriend ever, I believe.
Yeah, I think he does say that. It seems like instead of bettering his life and the life of his friends or anything like that, the goal in this series is just going to be to save her from mistakes that she will make in the future, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he finds out that she, I mean, the whole episode opens in modern day and he finds, watching the news, that she has died or been killed and
right. There's
gangs involved and, you know, and yeah. He was like, what?
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know how far we can go without getting into spoiler territory, which we try to avoid for episode ones. Things are different than the way they first appear to be. It seems like an interesting change, something that if it had been exactly what I thought it was going to be, it might have been less appealing to me. But because they've sort of changed up this trope, it's got a little bit more interest, a little bit more intrigue, a little bit more pull for me. So
yeah, I feel like I'm with you on that. And it's like, I can't say I'm sold yet, but by the end of the first episode, it's like, okay, I'm on board, but I still kind of need to know where we're, you know, like it seems to know where we're going, but it doesn't seem obvious that the whole show will be that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the show definitely knows what direction it's going. It just hasn't really completely informed us yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we're in decent hands. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems the writing seems pretty solid. Art style is good. Not spectacular or anything, but
yeah,
good.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I gave this one a 6 of 10.
Okay. I gave it a 7.
7. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
A little more. Our, you know, I think we're about one digit off on average.
Our internal calibrations are slightly different.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, and then next up is bound to be something that I'm talking about because I tried to structure this so we go back and forth a little bit.
It is, you are right, it is Vivi, Fluorite Eyes Song.
So this is Vivi, episode 3. The first two episodes were released in the first week, and so this being the second week, we're into episode 3 now. So we open finding out that we have skipped 15 years since the events of episodes 1 and 2. No real indication of why that was, just that future AI Coon, that's what I'm going to call him from now on, because I like to give characters nicknames rather than calling them their real names.
I like it.
So future AI Coon has, he's just sort of been asleep the whole time waiting for the next event that he has to change, I guess, to prevent this future AI revolution thing that's going to happen. So apparently the next incident that's coming up is there's a space hotel, a hotel in space. It's like a space station sort of thing, but it's a hotel that's going to crash into the Earth. And there's an AI who manages that hotel. And that's apparently who is going to crash the hotel into the Earth, killing everyone on board, but no one on Earth dies. And that's going to start a whole anti-AI thing, which then is the reason that the AIs revolt in the future, I guess. It seems to be the story based on what they're giving me. Vivi herself, is her actual name. Diva seems almost completely unchanged from 15 years ago. She's still, you know, wants to complete her mission, which is to make people happy with her singing. Her audiences have at least gotten slightly larger, but she's still on the same, you know, hole in the wall stage down a side alley somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't really seem to have advanced much or done much. So anyway, future AI Coon tells D.Va about this, you know, space station and this AI who controls the space hotel is going to crash it. And D.Va, of course, is immediately like, no, why would she do that? Because she trusts sort of everyone except for this future AI who actually knows what's going to happen. This has been sort of a recurring thing in the first couple of episodes as well, where it's just like she just goes against him for really no apparent reason. She really has
that stubbornness.
Yeah. Anyway, so the plan is future AI Coon gets D.Va a job at the hotel, sort of incognito in disguise, because I guess she's well known enough that people might recognize her if her name was D.Va. So he registers her under the job as Vivi.
Okay.
So this is where we finally get the name, right? But it seems to carry nothing other than that, at least thus far. Anyway, so yeah, Vivi sort of rebels against future AI Coon and says, I don't think she's going to crash the hotel because, you know, I've just met her and, you know, it's just my feeling, I guess, you know, I've known you for 15 years and I know you're from the future, but you know, what you're saying, it doesn't make sense to me. So I'm going to go my own way and I'm going to, you know, screw up all the plans that you've laid. I don't really know why you need me for, she doesn't say any of this. This is all just in my head.
Like yeah. Yeah. Are you dropping this?
Oh yeah.
both times you've told me about it now, my mind starts to go blank. I can't follow it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to follow when you're watching it. But it's hard to care, I think, about, you know, there's not any character depth. The story is sort of stitched together feeling, I guess. My next line actually in my notes was, ugh, I'm done with this. So basically the whole story makes no sense and I'm sick of trying to make sense of it. 5 of 10 dropped.
All right.
That's Vivi.
So long, Vivi.
Yeah. If anyone else out there is enjoying it more and can, you know, maybe explain to me like what I'm clearly missing from this story and why it's enjoyable, let me know. I have been known to pick up shows that I drop if I find good reason to do so. I kind of doubt that's going to happen in this case, but you know, if you can provide a compelling reason for me to rejoin the show, I might consider it, I guess. Anyway, let's move on to Greener Pastures. All right, so moving away from anime that are terrible and I don't want to watch any more of, let's move on to Shadow's House, or Shadow House, as it's known in Japanese. I don't know why they added the S in English.
We both watched this, I think.
Yep, I watched it.
So yeah, to me, it's pretty neat. I like it a bit. It's like slice of life to me, but with like a, I don't know, like a gothic meets like Victorian aesthetic. Like it's fancy old like Victorian-esque clothes with a I don't know. There's like a family that are just shadowed. They're silhouettes.
Yeah.
They release soot
when they get frustrated or I guess any sort of strong emotion.
That's true. But even when one of the characters was just touching things, she was kind of smearing soot around. I was like, that's interesting. And I kept thinking with this, just that setup alone, is there a metaphor here? Is this, I don't know. It's hard not to think like related to race or related to self-projection or related to like, I don't know. It seemed, I kept trying to find some sort of metaphor, not really feeling successful in just one episode, but.
Yeah,
I was curious what you thought of that. You know, just that aspect of the show.
I don't know. Yeah, there's a certain, I guess, along those lines. The only thing I really thought was that there was two selves, right? There's the outward visible self, which our main character is a doll, an automaton sort of thing that is created to be the sort of outward face of one of the members of this family, who is, you know, all shadow and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, in profile or anything else, they look the same basically, right?
Yeah, just shadowed.
So it seems like she's just sort of a non-shadow version of this other character, sort of. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah, there's maybe some sort of something theme there, with that, you know, public face versus private face.
And I like that. I guess my only issue with that take is that in the beginning, she's really just doing this doll. Oh yeah, I wrote down in my notes the doll tech in this show is way ahead of its time.
Yeah,
because she's pretty much looks exactly like a human. I mean, a human anime person, but yeah. She also like has to eat. Like, she must have sustenance, food, and
I mean, that's what powers her machinations or whatever.
Yeah, so she's dang near just human, but not. She's a doll. And, but anyway, when she's first introduced, she's has just become this girl's doll, which I guess it's a coming of age thing. You reach a certain age of, you know, what's deemed adulthood, and then you get a doll. But at first, like, she's just doing chores for her, cleaning up and whatnot. And so it's more like a maid. But then later, yeah, as you said, they introduce the whole, she is her image or her, you know, but it seemed like more just for, I forget this character's name, the shadowed person who this doll is paired with, but,
I can't remember it either. It's like right there. It's right there in my brain.
Like Kate's or Catherine or something like that. Like,
yeah. Cause she goes through all the different like Kate, Katie,
yeah.
Kathy sort of names when she's trying to think of a name for the doll.
Yeah. She thinks of something like really similar to her own name.
Yeah. Yeah. So Catherine or something, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I'm going to go with Kate. Okay. But anyway, Kate, damn it, now I forgot what I was going to say.
I wish I could help you. I can't find my notes for this. Oh. I maybe forgot to take notes somehow. I'm not sure.
How. I was going to say, basically the doll, like when she brings up the doll is a representation of her, since she can't make, you know, clearly make facial expressions and show emotion and all that. But yeah, Kate, I don't know. It seems to just be for her own amusement that she would have, you know, her doll to look at and imagine that she had facial expressions. Like, I would love for her to take her out to the mall or something and just walk behind her and, you know, I don't know, try to pretend like she's not there, I guess. But yeah, she doesn't seem to leave the house much, though. She seems pretty sedentary and, I don't know, doesn't seem to have a job or responsibilities. I don't know. We haven't gotten much information yet.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to leave the room, really, right? They're just sort of in that one in Kate's room.
Yeah.
It's about the only place. And we've seen our automaton's room. I forget, what is she? She comes up with her own name too, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, it's escaping me.
But yeah, I'm not sure there are malls in this world.
Yeah, probably not. It was a joke.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm sure there's some general store, you know, but they do seem like an affluent,
noble or something.
Yeah. So they probably don't have to have jobs or go anywhere. Or
yeah.
Do anything. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This, the show is, yeah, sort of mysterious and intriguing and, like our main character seems very likable, if not a bit naive, I guess. She doesn't know, you know, a whole lot about the world. She's having to learn things as she goes because she's essentially just been created / born. And yeah, Kate is sort of teaching her about the world. And yeah, it's largely just the interactions between them that we've seen so far. And yeah, it's a very slice of life, you know, just sort of characters interacting with each other. And yeah, as you mentioned at towards the end of the episode, they do show another family member, presumably, or another shadow person anyway.
Yeah.
with their automaton of their own. So, yeah, I imagine there will be more characters in the future. And
that doll did not look pleased.
Did not look like a friendly doll at all. No.
So we'll have some drama in our slice of life, at least comedically.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I gave this one like a 6.
Same.
Yeah.
We're on the same page.
Yeah, it seems solid enough. It can probably, you know, go up or down from here, just kind of depending on what they do. Seems more likely that it's trending upward for me, but, you know, yeah.
This comes up a lot, too. The only other thing I'll say is the show opens with kind of a cool little scene, but then it shows this train in the old 3D CG, and it's just looks really rough and not, it just stands out, and I don't know. It's like, I don't know why that was necessary at all.
But I don't even remember that.
Oh, you don't remember? Yeah, I wrote it down.
Huh.
But I mean, it's a minor. It never comes. That's why I'm wondering, like, why did you need to show a train, like, and why did it need to be all 3D and clumsy looking?
Yeah, that's odd. I mean, this is CloverWorks, I'm pretty sure, if I remember right. This is CloverWorks animation
this. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and they tend to be pretty solid. So I don't remember seeing that, or at least I don't remember noticing it. So
maybe it's something they'll fix for the, you know, Blu-ray DVD release.
Yeah, maybe.
Sometimes the case.
Anyway, yeah, Shadow's House, not bad. Decent enough. I'm going to watch some more.
Same.
Next up, we've got Battle Athletes Victory Restart, Episode 1. I honestly don't really know what to say about this one. The story seems to be to become a queen. They don't really say queen of what, but to become the queen, you have to win the Cosmos Beauty Contest.
Of course.
And so it's like a beauty pageant, except the way that you win the beauty pageant seems to be by running and climbing and stuff. So I'm really not sure. I don't know, man. It's a girls' friendship / rivalry sports anime is essentially what this is. So far, the only one that I like is the main character, but then we haven't met a whole lot of other characters yet. But most of the ones that we do aren't nice people and kind of suck. But yeah, the main character is almost too likable. She's just too nice and like, she's supposed to be, you know, a bit of a country bumpkin. Like, that's how she's written. So I guess...
The Shadow Water kind of thing? Or...
Well, yeah, I guess. Like, her family grows potatoes. They're potato farmers, I guess. And most of the other girls that are in this competition are from... Well, they're all from different planets. She's the representative of Earth, which they don't really show how she got to become the representative of Earth, but she's the representative of Earth. And then they've got Pluto and Venus and the other planets of the solar system, which apparently have all been colonized by humans at this point or something. Anyway, all of them are very just competitive, you know, win at any cost sort of thing. And she's just like, oh, I'm just here because I met this magical girl that fell out of the sky when I was 7. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then if you just tack onto that all of the unnecessary panning, sweeping boob / panty / butt shots that are in this, I'm done with it.
Okay. There we go. Yeah. I was waiting for it.
5 out of 10 dropped.
All right.
So yeah. I really don't have I said a lot more about that than I thought I was going to be honest with you. So
I know, for a second you lost me. I was like, wait, is he gonna keep watching it?
No, I mean, there is some amount of interest in them, like, actually making, there's one character who's sort of like a friend character, or is going to become the friend / rival of our main character. And they, over the course of the show, will no doubt make her more likable, but right now she kind of sucks. You know, I don't know. It's just not worth investing my time into, I don't think.
Hey, I'm with you. I haven't seen it, but I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, then after that, we have an unscheduled stop. I added this one just sort of on a whim. And I have to switch to my other tab so that I remember the title right, because the title is quite long. So probably based on a light novel, I would guess.
Yeah, it's a good assumption.
But you're probably going to be surprised that I chose to watch this. because I did talk quite a bit of trash about it in our what we're going to watch. I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level.
The other slime show.
Yeah, the other slime show. So it's not, yeah. In watching it, it is not at all like that time I got reincarnated as a slime. It just has the slime thing in common, but the main character's not a slime or anything. So, you know, obviously she's just been killing slimes. But it's, you know, a pretty standard isekai sort of beginning. You know, she's a hard working businesswoman in Tokyo who overworks herself and collapses dead suddenly. And then meets a god who says, well, you know, I kind of feel bad because you worked so hard your whole life and now you're just dead at 23 or whatever age she is. So I'm going to give you a new life in a new world and I'll give you some special powers. And she's like, oh, you mean like immortality? She's like, yeah, I'll give you immortality. Sure. Let's do that. So then she goes and is reincarnated in this world as a witch and, you know, gets like a free house that was also provided by the god, apparently. And she's immortal. So she's going to live forever. And it's a very sort of peaceful village. Like the worst monsters that are there are these slimes, really low level slimes. And when you kill them, you get like a gem or something, I guess, some monetary unit that you can then take to the Adventurers Guild and turn in and get real money for, and then you can use that money to live off of. So she, you know, just makes it her goal to like kill 25 slimes a day, so that she has, you know, pocket money to live off of. She's already got a free house, so not a lot of expenditures for her. She does that for 300 years. And,
wow. That flew by.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does fly by. Anyway, so she does that for 300 years. She, you know, is this whole time like just cashing in the money. So it's not like she has this huge amount of money that she's saved up or anything. But she wasn't even thinking about the fact that these slimes, each one you kill, gets you like one experience point. And she killed 25 a day for 300 years. So now her experience level is like maxed out, right? Okay. Video game references there.
Yes.
Of course. And like, yeah, she's got all these powers that she didn't even know about because she never even tried to use them, that she just got for leveling up because she never thought to check her level. She just sort of lived as this witch that lives just outside the town. And, you know, if something came up, she would, you know, help the town out however she could. Anyway, and then one day she finds out that she's super max level. And everyone basically wants to prove that they are the strongest and by defeating her. But she's so overpowered that they don't have a chance. That seems to be basically the setup for the show is that, you know, she's just super, super, super overpowered. Wasn't even really aware of it, which it sort of reminds me of the one from last season, Last Dungeon, where he was super overpowered and didn't realize it, but she now has realized it, whereas he never did. It's taken a different route from this point on.
Yeah.
But as far as the first episode goes, yeah, there's some parallels there, and I enjoyed the first episode, actually. Yeah.
Right on.
More than I thought I would based on the silly title, which, I mean, you never know with these light novel titles, right?
Yeah, it's hard to judge it by that alone.
But yeah, it was pretty fun little... I don't know. I guess that's like the second witch isekai thing. The saint's magic power is omnipotent, being the other one. The other, you know, she's not really a witch, but sort of a similar isekai superpower girl thing, yeah. I guess.
It seems like amusing, funny, and like when she realizes all these powers and stuff. Like, how did you not know? But then it also seems like at the same time, like a power fantasy too, at least that element of like, oh my God, I didn't know, but I can, you know, destroy worlds or whatever.
Right, right. Which, because all of this happened in the first episode, it sort of leads me to believe that going on from here, yeah, it is going to be just sort of a, maybe just sort of a power fantasy thing, but she's pretty chill. Like her whole thing, like when she died and was asking the god, or the god said she was going to reincarnate her, she said she just wanted like a relaxing, easygoing life because she had worked so hard, you know, as this businesswoman in Tokyo. She just wanted a laid back, chill life. So she's a really laid back, chilled lady, has been for 300 years.
She's not actually in a video game though, but there's video game logic and where she was transported to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a fairly common isekai trope.
Yeah. But it's funny that they would go to the lengths of like having God, like she had a conversation with God. It sounds
yeah.
like.
Well, a God.
A God.
And she.
Okay. She. Whoa.
She God.
She God. But, I don't know. It's just funny that they had a conversation, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm sending you to a world with video game logic. You know, they could have worked that in somehow, but okay. All right.
I mean, in a video game, you can see what your level is and all of that stuff anytime you want. In this world, you can only have your level checked by this sort of magical slate thing that they have at the Adventurer's Guild. So you put your hand on it and it shows you what your level is.
I see.
And she hadn't bothered to do that for 300 years because she didn't care.
Yeah.
She wasn't trying to level up. She was just, you know, collecting the gems to make money, to be able to buy things, to, you know, live her life as a peaceful recluse.
She just didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems fun.
And like I say, and then like a dragon shows up and wants to challenge her. Because he thinks he's the most powerful, and they're both about 300 years old, so you know, could go either way, but
anyway,
she defeats him without much effort. So yeah, there is a little bit of that power fantasy thing going on, but I don't know, it's fairly light and fun thus far. I don't know where it's going to go from here. They might have bled all of the things I like out of it just in this first episode, and as a first episode standalone, pretty good. We'll see where it goes.
Cool.
But that's all I got on that one. And that's all we got for this episode. So ends episode 5 of the Umlike Anime Podcast. Did we miss anything? Is there anything that we said that you disagree with? Is there anything, that we're not watching that we should? Anything that we are watching that you think is trash and you want to tell us how terrible our taste is? How could you possibly enjoy that show about whatever
slimes?
It's not about slimes, but yeah
I know.
Go ahead and leave us a message on any of the social platforms where you normally do that sort of thing. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of those things at @umlikeanime, @umlikeanime. I'm Tony, and this is George.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.